The Game Schooler Podcast is a weekly audio show that highlights the educational value of tabletop gaming. In this week's episode, we'll cover Silver and Gold, our recommended game of the week, discuss tactical thinking in the school of gaming, and wrap it up with the high five push your luck games. Welcome to the Game Schooler Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. I am your host, Doug Kotecki, along with my co-host, Dr. Michael McCabe.
What's happening, Doug?
Not much. What a week, huh?
Yeah, it's been a great week. I'm still getting caught up on the spectacular, the Dice Tower Summer Spectacular. There's some segments that I'm going back and rewatching, but a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah, a lot of content. And you've been out of the state for a little bit.
Yeah,
so you're just getting back, getting warmed up.
Now, before we get into my travels, and we say out of the state, we're from the Midwestern states in the United States. But, Doug, we've had a listener spike recently since joining the Dice Tower Network, which
naturally.
Is awesome.
Yep.
So let's talk about geographic location. 72% of our listeners come from which country?
The United States of America.
Correct. Where do 6% of our listeners come from?
Portugal.
No. Good guess. 6% of our listeners from Singapore, which means we have more than one person in Singapore listening.
All right, there you go.
How about Deutschland? How much do you think that's Germany, Doug?
Oh, sorry, I didn't follow. What is the percentage of German listeners? Is that what your question is?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 11%.
3%.
Yes.
I'm going down. So I went 72 and 6.
I didn't know
so
if you were mixing it up
jump,
and
nope, not
throwing
a curveball.
It all around. Okay.
Then we've got France, Sweden, and Canada. All those are right around 2 to 3%. It's just, that's amazing to me to think that, you know, in our 29th episode, we have listeners all around the world. And I know we talked about this when we first started it and launched it, but to see that actually come true. We're just very grateful to have people all around the world game schooling and wanting to find out more.
I'm a little disappointed that our Canadianese numbers are not higher.
Hey, man, give it time. Canada will catch on. 2% for Canada. And that's just percentage.
Yeah,
you know,
we're just going by percentage.
We
all
take
right.
our show on the road, and we'll get up there and make some friends. Right?
Okay. So speaking of, a week or two ago, we celebrated 4th of July. And over that holiday weekend, did you get to play anything? I got to play a game called America, which is horribly out of print, but a delightful game that it's a trivia game, and my wife is usually not one to win trivia games, and she won a trivia game.
That's awesome. Way to go, Katie.
And that's one where they have a question such as apple pie, and it would say, what year did apple pie, so one question relates to a year. When did apple pie first appear in America, for example?
1985.
Correct. Yeah, Betty Crocker, Sarah Lee. Which state eats the most apple pie, for example? And the other one would be how many apple pies are consumed a year in the United States? So there's usually a number, a location, state, and then a year. And you're placing cubes out on the board, kind of guessing where they are. And you get points if you're exactly right or if you're adjacent. So if it's in what state is the Football Hall of Fame?
Ohio.
Ohio. Okay. And you put a cube down there and I'm like, I think Michael knows this one. I can just start putting my cubes in states around Ohio, and I'm going to score some points even though I didn't get it exactly right.
Okay.
So it's a cool little, it's one of those where you don't need to know everything.
Yeah.
You just need to know some of it or close to it, and you can still win.
Now, when you say something is out of print, and for our gamers, you're going to know what we mean by that, but let's explain it to our game schoolers who are just jumping in here. What do you mean by out of print?
So every time a game is produced or printed, they print a set number of copies, so much like a book, okay? And sometimes those games are extremely popular. And so they'll do a second printing and a third printing and a fourth printing. And games like Catan and Ticket to Ride and Pandemic Who knows how many printings there are.
Yeah.
And every printing doesn't necessarily change the game. It's not like it's a second edition where it's revised. They're just printing more copies of the same game. Some games have an initial printing, and then either they weren't popular enough or, you know, it just is not fiscally manageable to do another print run. You know, and some of these games are popular and they go away and then they become kind of endearing through the years, and then a company will eventually reprint them, third printing later. So when it's out of print, it's can be hard to find. You know, some games are out of print, but nobody wants them, so they're available everywhere. This happens to be a game that's out of print, and I think it's pretty hard to get.
Well, Doug, and you know I'm a man that has several pet peeves, and this is one of them, where somebody hypes up a board game, talks about it on a podcast, and you can't get it. This game you can actually get off of Amazon for $184.25.
Readily available.
Or there are six copies, but you can't purchase them from America. So if you want to pay for shipping from Deutschland has three of the six copies available. There's one in England, going for £20, but tack on shipping, probably $57, $58. Available.
I apologize.
I just love to give you a hard time. It should be coming back into print at some point in time, though, right?
I have no idea. Well, I have not heard. Probably not. It's based off of a game called Fauna, and Terra were also printed, same game style. Those may or may not be available as well. Same exact game. One's about animals. One's about the earth as a whole.
Well, you are a wealth of board game knowledge. I appreciate that, Doug.
So I thought it was a nice tie into the 4th of July, but sorry to talk about so long on a game that's unavailable to
most
else? People.
Any available games that people should try out?
Yes, the other games that I played are all readily available. Those of you that know me know I may have once or twice been to Taco Bell.
What? Today?
I know, it's surprising.
Today or total? They do not sponsor the show, ladies and gentlemen, but boy, they should. You could give us, you don't even need to give us stock or cash, just gift cards.
Yeah,
Tell them about the gold standard of Taco Bell's. Tell them about, go ahead.
Yeah, Janesville, Wisconsin, Milton Avenue. There's three locations in Janesville, Wisconsin. The Milton Avenue location is top notch.
Okay.
I played the Taco Bell game, which when I saw that it came out, I had to get it.
Please tell me you got destroyed in it.
I won one and I lost one.
All right.
But it's a fun little filler game. It's not too complicated. You've got Taco Bell menu items and you're trying to feed people coming into the restaurant. And there's, you know, some take that elements where you can kind of screw up your opponents or do some special abilities.
What about the Naked Chicken Chalupa? Is that available?
It is not on there. Maybe an expansion. It's an expansion.
I don't want to play.
There'll be an expansion with a Naked Chicken Chalupa and a Doritos Locos Taco.
Ooh, that's a good one too.
So it was a good game, and it was better than I thought for most mass market games that are attached to a brand.
Any game schooling applications for the Taco Bell one? And I mean that seriously, even though it's hard to say it with a straight face. Any skill development opportunities? Well,
there's definitely set collection, and there is the tactical thinking in there, which we'll talk about later in this episode, where you kind of have to pivot on as you're collecting. You know, some of the customers want a specific item.
Yep.
And you need to give them a lot of that item, and some of them need a mixture. And so how long you build up collecting menu items can change in an instant. You know, you think you're saving up for somebody, and then, you know, your opponent feeds that customer, then you got to move on to somebody else.
Awesome.
There's some good application there.
Next time we have a lunch meeting, can you bring that game along? I think it would just be awesome.
I carry it with it everywhere I go.
All right, great.
I'm hoping it gets me free tacos at Taco Bell.
Good.
And then I played Medium, which is a fun little party game where two players have put down a word. So, for example, Stripe, and the other player partner puts down the word Black, and then you've got to start with, count down 3, 2, 1, and then say a word.
Guess a word.
And they both, you're trying to get match the same word as your partner. So, and that one's like Tiger. And if you both say Tiger, great. You you get some points. If you screw up and one of you says referee and the other person says tiger, now you need to, you're now looking for the connection between referee and tiger and then trying to do it. You get three chances and you kind of work around the table. So the players to your right and left are your partners throughout the game.
Easy game to teach, easy game to learn.
Yeah,
be a great game for an icebreaker.
Yeah, a lot of fun moments in there where two people think that they both have a connection and say something completely opposite. And then we played Pandemic Hot Zone again.
Ooh, how was that?
It's good. It holds up, and I think it meets that requirement the same way that the smaller Ticket to Rides do.
Okay,
I think
great.
It fits in the collection really well on that as a next step between Forbidden Island, and then I would go to Pandemic Hot Zone, and then full-blown Pandemic at that point.
Nice little progression there. And Medium, Doug, just to circle back on that, it is readily available for $168 less than America. So that one's a good old $15.99. And it's not that you have to buy your games at Amazon. It's that I have a web browser open, and I was able to find it. I know Medium is available at a lot of big box stores as well.
And Pandemic Hot Zone is at Target. So all those other three are a 3-to-1 ratio, not too bad. How about you? Did you play anything recently?
I'm not playing enough games, and that's my biggest complaint. We were with family all week, which is great, except there was a little bit of competition to leave the house. Of if you could get out of the house, because there's seven kids in the house, you kind of get out of the house. And I wanted to get to Target and pick up summer camp, you know, because my friend Doug has it, and it's a Target exclusive, meaning I could only buy it at Target. I didn't even make it to Target. And if you're in the Twin Cities, if you're in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, there is a Target everywhere. They are like taverns in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
All right? On every corner.
Yeah, it's like the Starbucks in Seattle, right?
Yeah. Starbucks in Seattle or Manhattan, where there's like 55 in a couple block area. Yeah, same thing. So that's my biggest gripe and complaint. Had a good time with family. Just I in this zone where I feel like I'm not playing enough games, and big part of that is I lost my little gamer, right? The kiddo that was doing school from home with me is now in summer mode, so she doesn't want to play board games with dad every day at 2 o'clock anymore. So all good though.
Well, we'll stage an intervention with your family on
that.
Thank
you. Yeah. I'd appreciate that. Get them a menu of games that they must choose from.
All right. Is there anything else before we move on to the recommended game of the week?
Let's get into that.
All right.
The recommended game of the week is a family-friendly game we think you should add to your collection, and it passes our stringent criteria for quality and content. This week's game is Silver and Gold by Pandasaurus, and has the added benefit of taking up very little shelf space. Doug, tell us the statistics.
Published in 2019, designer is Phil Walker Harding. The art is by Oliver Freudenreich. 2 to 4 players, 20 minutes, ages 8 and up. All of that information is accurate. And according to the publisher, distant islands, golden treasures, who hasn't dreamed of them? You are in luck because the treasure is in your hands. You are holding silver and gold, pure, addictive gold by Phil Walker Harding, designer of Sushi Go, Imhotep, Baron Park. Players must rain X's down rapid fire in the right configuration to close out island cards and hit the right bonuses before they can jump to the next card. Every card in the game can be written on and cleaned off. Such a clever game will have you playing again and again. So, to break this down in real terms, this is how the game plays. Were there 4 rounds?
Yeah.
4 rounds. Every round, you're flipping over a card that has
7 turns per round.
That has a Tetris shape that then you are going to write on one of the 2 available cards in front of you. They're kind of like little treasure maps. And as you cross off the spaces, some of them have extra bonuses that will allow you to X off another space or score points based on palm trees that you're covering up and gold coins and things like that. Once you completely fill in a card with X's in it, then you draw a new one from the row of cards that are out there to take, and then you keep filling those in. At the end of 4 rounds, and there's, 6 or 7 shapes per round that come out?
7 that come out. There's 8 total shapes. seven that come out. Some of the shapes are, there's two of them in the deck, so you have the possibility to draw them twice, and others, they're only in the deck once.
And you won't know which one is not going to show up that round.
Right.
So that's not information that's available to you. At the end of the game, you're going to score points based on each map has kind of a different, there's like four or five different colors of maps that you're filling in, and you're going to score different points, and some of them give you bonuses for having more purple ones or more green ones and things like that. At the end of the game, after four rounds, whoever's got the most points wins.
Yep.
Very simple game.
So some of the cards, when you complete them, they'll have bonuses built in. So I might get an extra point for every card that's completed that's in the sword family.
Sure.
Right? And you can chain those together to really increase your score.
All right. So we talked about this last week as our high five roll and write game.
Yep.
What do you like about this game?
I don't know where to start. I could get a little excited and people may be turning down their podcast, whether they're walking or driving. I absolutely love this game.
So pull over, folks.
Yeah. I absolutely love this game for the following reasons. One, it is accessible. My 8-year-old through me, my 12-year-old, my wife, we all love this game. I love this game because of the tactical decisions that you are faced with. As when we play it as a family, when a card is drawn, we cross that off of the list. There's a little scorecard that just tracks what round you're in, what cards come up. So as you're going in with three turns left, you can see, well, out of the four cards, what could come up. And it builds a little nice piece of tension that at first it was just my tension. But then when my kids figured out, well, why is Dad getting excited over there? So that little following along within the round is a thing that I enjoy about it. I enjoy how you can chain together, your turns. Mm-hmm. So if you cross off an X, you get an extra mark, and that then allows you to cross off a palm tree, which then allows you to add a bonus in. And, so I like that your turn can really be extended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One, for being such a simple, small game, it's got quality components. The fact that you're able to write and write on every card and wipe it off is awesome. The whole concept of writing on the cards is cool. I mean, I think there's something when I'm playing with my family and it's like, can we really do this?
Yeah.
There's that level of like, well, we shouldn't be writing on the cards. And the idea that you get to do that, it's almost like an unwritten rule that you get to break. It's like, no, in this game, you do write on the cards. So I like that. And I love, you know, you talked about that little bit of a timer there of which cards are left. I love the spatial puzzling in this game and trying to figure it out. But the interesting thing about it is most games with that type of a mechanism tend to be more of a solitaire game.
Yeah.
But there is some the elements of, okay, which card of these do I want to complete now? Because that row is available for everyone to draw new map cards from. And so there is the interaction of how fast can I need to get that one next. I want to get the, oh, shoot, they took that one. And there's the, is it the gold that whoever racks up the gold first? There's, you're competing against the other players for gold bonuses. So
when you cross off your fourth gold token, you get a trophy.
Yeah.
Right. And if you're the first person, I think your trophy's worth 6. And if you're the second person, your trophy's worth 5. And that's a fun little, there's the races within the game.
Yeah.
Right?
And so those elements make it more interactive than a traditional roll and write, in that there is that. It's not just me in a corner working out how these shapes are going to work. You're paying attention to what other people are doing, and you're interacting with them, even though you're not, playing take that cards or putting pieces out on the board that are interfering with people. So I like that it takes it out of the solitaire realm.
Yeah, I would say that I also like those games where it's solitaire and I'm just figuring out on my card over here. But that's not silver and gold. Mm-hmm. Silver and gold is also, I mean, it's the main dish for us. It's not, hey, we're going to, like, we have another game that we play a lot. Reiner Knizia, shout out, Llama, right?
Never heard of him.
We played it about 8 times over the weekend. Dr. Reiner Knizia, he's designed a few games, 614 of them I think you own. And when we play Llama and we're done with it, similar with Sushigo, if we just play Sushigo, it's like, all right, I kind of want to play another game. Silver and Gold, there are those mini games that are happening within it, and the social interaction. You're looking something up. You're about to bust me on something. No, did Ryder Kenizia not do Llama?
No, he did.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you're good.
Quadruple checking for the 18th time. A little inside joke there. Our listeners will appreciate who've been with us since day one. But I like those mini games that are happening within Silver and Gold, like you're talking about, because I can keep track of what you're doing. I've played this with you in a two-player game, and I can keep track. I need to keep track because I may want other cards. When you add the additional players, that element is still in there. I need to know when you're completing a card, because when you get in the second and third round, one to two people are going to complete a card every single turn.
Yeah.
And so keeping track of those bonuses, it has that little competition in it, but it's not mean. It's fun.
Yeah. The idea of watching how close is somebody to completing a card, how close is somebody getting to collecting all the coins. These are things that it's like a quick glance around the board, you can do that. And you don't need to, as all the information's public, I don't need to remember what you were dealt or some of those where it can get complicated. Like, I need to keep track of what five people are doing. And unless I have an Excel spreadsheet in my brain, is impossible to do. This has quick things you can check on and kind of check out the flow of the room you're making your decisions.
Even if you have an Excel spreadsheet in your brain, you're not able to keep track of everything that I'm doing. You still have to trust that I'm crossing off the X's on my card, and that I have a skill that we're going to get into that I think you're going to hammer me on. That's a little bit of a stretch. But the thing that I really like about this game is I'm only able to worry about myself. So when my daughters are playing, they're not screaming at each other and saying, yeah, but you did this. Yeah, but you didn't do that. There's not that level of interaction because of how fast the game moves.
Yeah, I think it's the idea of looking at information quickly. You don't have to process.
It's a glance.
You can find the information that you need quickly. And you can't disrupt what the other person is doing. You can't stop them from doing anything. So they can still play the game that they're playing. You can just get that periphery idea of what's going on and still function. Having that extra brain power doesn't matter. You don't need it.
Right. That's a good way of putting it, which is probably why I like it so much.
Yeah. So the other one more thing that I wanted to say is this is published by Pandasaurus. Pandasaurus also came out with a game not too long ago called Sonora.
Yep.
And Sonora is what they call a flick and write game. And I feel like some of the things that are going on in Silver and Gold are simplified of what's going on with Sonora without the flicking. And so I just want to throw that out there to people. If you're a gamer, you know about both games, or I think Sonora has been in Target too, maybe.
Yeah.
And if you've seen that and you're like, oh, I think one of these or the other, Silver and Gold is much more approachable. And from my personal opinion, I get the same good feelings that I get from Sonora without the extra flicking and kind of doodads and things attached onto it. So if you're looking for a more streamlined game, go in this direction
and
more family
point.
Friendly.
I think my only nitpick with the game, and it's a big stretch of a nitpick, the limiting to four players. I've thought, well, how could you play this in larger groups? Or how could, if I walk into a classroom with 24 kids, or if I'm walking into a library and I'm looking to facilitate this with a homeschool group or a Saturday game school group, I really think you need one copy per four players. Am I right or am I wrong there? There's no way to...
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's what the general retail is going to be $10 to $15 for this game.
And that's
game.
Where I was going to go.
And I think that this is an ideal candidate. You know, sometimes the idea of having a roll and write that can work for the entire class at once sounds great, but there are some logistical things that pop up. And this seems to be the perfect game to put people in those little groups of four and divide up a classroom and have four or five games going. And as a facilitator, as a teacher, it's very easy to monitor and kind of check in from table to table. So I think it lends itself great to that atmosphere.
I would just get one copy for four players and put 2 rubber bands per copy on it, because I had this explode in the car this week. You know what I mean? But you could, if you have a quiver, I'm sure you could get, boy, how many different sets of this game into one little box and stuff your markers in there. It's a great game.
Yeah,
it truly is. And it's one that, honestly, especially as the world's opening up again, I look forward to taking into the school setting with you and into the game schooling setting and facilitating. I think this would be a fantastic game to teach because, hey, guys, if I can teach it in 6 to 8 minutes and get people playing it, it's an easy teach.
Yeah.
So that's my pitch for this as a recommended game of the week.
Well, and for all intents and purposes, you're talking about a small card game. You know, usually when we're talking about small card games, that you think about, it's like, well, that... Okay, maybe you're going to pull one skill out of there. It's not something that you think, okay, I can build a whole, you know, skill building exercise out of and really get some, you know, there's meat on the bones on this game. And both Michael and I have lists of 5 skills that we think your kids and students can learn from a game like this. You know, Michael's hesitant on one, but I think we'll see. Let's see.
Yeah, this one I'm not hesitant on, though, and that's responsiveness, a game that challenges a student's reaction time. I may be discerning, should I complete this card right now or should I wait a turn? Well, the problem with waiting a turn, the card that I want, I'm just going to call it the gallery or the marketplace. I don't know what the appropriate term is, but where you can select from 4 available cards out in front of you, it may not be there next turn. So if I want that card, I better figure out how to complete the card that's in my hand to go get that new card. But even if I do that, it might not be my turn to go first.
Yep.
So if I complete a card and the person sitting to my right takes the one that I wanted, I have to respond now and go get it. I think that this game helps to develop that, especially for people who have paralysis by analysis. They're able to make choices and just move on.
Yeah, well, and that's where I've got the, which I'm sure is on your list too, is the tactical thinking, is you've got to pivot where you thought you were going to put a shape. The shape that you wanted to come up didn't come out. Now what are you going to do? And so there's the long-term strategy of this game, I don't really think is there. It's predetermined on the idea of like, yeah, you want to fill in this card. But it's more important how you're doing it when you're doing it. And that's where that tactical thinking comes in, which is a game that challenges students to make decisions based on currently available and frequently changing information.
Yeah, I have it too.
All right. What else you got?
Any other reasons why you have tactical? Because you grabbed the whole smorgasbord of what I was going to say with it. That's exactly why.
Any more of why it's tactical?
Additional reasons? Yeah.
No, I mean, I think this is just a clear cut. It goes into the responsiveness. You got to make the decisions fast. And the tactical thing is that the game situation is constantly changing with variables that you don't know what they're going to be. If, for example, every shape came out in a set order, you'd be able to plan and strategize that.
Yeah.
But you have no idea what shapes are coming out when. Even when you get down to the last card, it's still a 50-50 chance of what shape it's going to be, and you need to adapt to whether it's the shape you want it to be or the shape you don't.
And that's where I have that leads right into resource management, which is a game that boosts a student's capacity to efficiently and effectively oversee available assets. So chaining together the bonuses, I talked about an extra point for the sword. If I get 2 points for every crown and 1 point for every sword, and all of a sudden I am completing crown cards and sword cards, that can have a significant impact on my score at the end. And I think the second time, the third time a kiddo plays the game, they really see how that works together, and they start to see completed cards as a resource. Not, oh, I need to go ahead and get this, not from a hoarding standpoint that's in some other games, but really I already have this, so how can I use what I have and build off of that?
Yeah.
So that was my third skill.
That's a great one. I'm going to hit another low-hanging fruit here, and that's spatial perception.
Those are 4 out of 5 already gone. Good.
All right. A game that strengthens a student's understanding of the spatial relationships with the objects in their environment and themselves. So any game where you've got Tetris-style pieces and you're trying to fit them into different grids, you've got spatial perception. Yeah. You're trying to figure out how you can flip and rotate those shapes to fit them how you want and in a position where you're going to be able to build off of it later. You know, you don't want to just randomly have to fill in one square at a time. You want to do it in big chunks and efficiently as possible. And that little puzzle and the idea that you have two cards that you're working on at the same time gives you options. Yep. Like, okay, well, I can move this shape over here, put that shape over there. And it's really interesting watching your kids make those mental calculations.
And it's a skill that improves over each turn.
Yeah, each card, yeah.
So in the 28 turns in the game total, and they go fast, you can really see how that improves over time, even within a single game. That's a great one.
All right, what's the one you're worried about? Well, you said you only got one left, right?
Yeah,
I still got 3 left.
I do. It's selflessness. And we define selflessness as a game that inspires students to put the needs of others in front of their own. And what I really have here is I'm just going to worry about me, not you. So usually we would talk about selflessness as a sacrifice. But folks, let me tell you, after spending, you know, what should have been 4 hours in the car turned into 7 hours and 20 minutes, because in 4th of July weekend in the United States, people like to travel. 7 hours in a car and then 5 days in a house with 7 kids, there was a whole lot of bickering going on. And bringing silver and gold to the table and just letting people worry about their own card, oh, did that bring some sweet satisfaction and silence to the table and joy to my heart. So it might be a stretch.
Isn't that selfishness?
No, because if you have kids who are always going to point out what's wrong with the other person. And this is not just kids. You mm-hmm. know, you talked about the spreadsheet in the head. And I love, love, love my brother-in-law. All right. He's my brother from another mother. But that guy likes to tell me what I'm doing right and wrong in my game. And sometimes I'll just say, hey, you worry about your own board over there. Right. And I think this game, part of the design of the pace and the card completion, it works for children so that they are not worried about what the other person is doing. They're only worried about what they're doing.
I guess I would make the argument that I think what you're saying is a valid point.
Hold on, let me interrupt you here.
Yeah.
There's zero take that and the game moves swiftly. So because of the limited take that.
I think what you're describing, I think, is a valid point, and it's a good section of like what I liked. I don't know that it fits with the selflessness moniker, because what you're saying is 100% true. You get to focus on your own thing. You don't have to worry, but it's not a conscious choice to not worry about something. That's just the design of the game, which to me just fits into the what you like about the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there might even be another skill that we haven't got, that we haven't fully unpacked or defined yet, but I'm thinking there were those students in the classroom that were just awesome students, and because they were awesome students, they were a joy to have in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this game does as well. It's such an enjoyable experience. The fact that my kids aren't bickering, but they're talking to each other in a civilized manner and congratulating on getting the trophy first and how they were one turn away.
Yeah.
What's going on? These are the same kids that were screaming pizza, macaroni, and cheese at a level 10 out of 10.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. I think it just goes into what I liked.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know that it's tied to selflessness as a skill. It's a great part of the game.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe not a skill that will develop over time, but something of the game that brought me joy enough that I wanted to give it airtime. What do you have?
All right, so I got 3 more here. 2 of them are really kind of connected, and that's risk management and time management.
Absolutely.
So the risk management, a game that students must identify, evaluate, and prioritize options to reduce the impact of unfortunate events or risks, and time management, a game that improves students' abilities to organize and plan how long they spend on specific activities before running out of time. So this game has two things going on at the same time. There is a counter in this game. You are only going to get so many shapes on the cards. And eventually you're getting to the point where you only have a couple shapes left. Where are you going to put them? How can you complete cards as you run out of time? And that becomes with the risk management, which you get, you want to leave spots open that you can fill them with a single shape, right?
Yeah.
And there's that risk of maybe the single shape that's going to fill that spot doesn't, is not going to come up this round. It might not even be in the deck for this card. So how long do you wait and push your luck waiting for that shape to come out to make that perfect? Or when do you cut your losses and say, I need to finish this card, even though it's not optimal?
Yep.
And those things are both in there. And the last thing I have is confidence, a game that promotes and increases a student's trust in their abilities and qualities. Every time, there's two parts about this game that are satisfying on a confidence level. One, every time you put a shape on your card, it's a confidence builder. You feel like you're, it's positive momentum.
But tell them the big confidence builder. I mean, that I would say that's secondary.
The first part is putting a shape in. The second part is when you can fill a shape in perfectly to finish a card. And then the third part is just finishing cards. And this is a game, too, where it's like by the end of the game, you're going to have six or seven cards that you finished. It's not one where you spend the whole game and you've got one or two cards.
Yep.
You start piling them up. And that every time you add a new card to your stack, you gain confidence. Your kids gain confidence. Like, I completed all of these.
And all that they need to know is how to fill in a shape, right?
Yeah.
To really do it and play it. So I want to put full disclosure, caveat, the youngest that I've played this game with is 8. My 5-year-old did not have the patience or the time for it. She just drew pretty pictures on the cards. We tried. It didn't work. But from 8 and 12 through my wife and I, that confidence is the same. When you finish a card, it's, I finished a card. And at least when I've been playing the game, and believe me, I can be a full jerkhead if I need to, but when I've been playing the game, people are happy for one another when they finish a card. Like, oh, you did. Yeah, good job. And so I think that continues to build confidence as well. It's almost a cascading effect of confidence, if that makes sense. When you finish a card and I finish a card, we're both, there's just some positive momentum that's built throughout the game.
Yeah. So that is our recommended game of the week, Silver and Gold. If you're looking for a low-cost, family weight, very accessible, fast-playing game that builds confidence and all of the other skills that we talked about, check this one out. There's no way that you would be disappointed with this game.
And I want to thank you, Doug, because I played this game with you. You said I would like it, and this is in our Hall of Fame from just a family game point.
Some McCabe Family Hall of Fame.
There's game schooling applications all over the place that we just talked about, but in terms of bringing the family together and playing a fun game, this is in our Hall of Fame.
All right, so Silver and Gold by Pandasaurus. Let's move on to the School of Gaming.
In the School of Gaming, we discuss concepts, keywords, etiquette, let me try that again, with concepts, folks, not concepts, and helpful ideas in the world of gaming and education. This week, we'll be talking about tactical thinking.
Ooh, I love me some tactical
thinking. Also known as the Kotecki favorite skill of the week every week.
All right, so let's start out with this. What is tactical thinking? You've heard it 1,000 times. Even though we have 29 episodes, you've heard it 1,000 times in our skill
building. A little hyperbolous.
I don't think so.
Let me do a real-time frequency count.
I think
784.
It's accurate. Oh, okay. Closer.
Go ahead.
A game that challenges students to make decisions based on currently available and frequently changing information. So that's what it is. What are the benefits of tactical thinking? You got any answers for that?
Oh, I think the ability to make a decision based on what's in front of you and not what's in your rearview mirror or what's ahead looking out your car. I mean, that is one of the primary benefits that Game-Based Learning Unplugged offers people. You have to make decisions.
Yeah.
It's taking the fun aspects of video games and bringing it into an unplugged setting and environment to build all the other skills. It's a meta skill.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here's the things that I think that when you're developing the skills, here's three things that your kids can develop. One is the ability to adapt. All right, you've got to adapt to what you're presented with. The second part is making decisions quickly. And in order to make those decisions, you need to start learning how to process information faster. You're making those internal notes, making and having those arguments in your brain quickly of saying, well, if I do this, if I do that, if I do this, this is the best choice. Being able to process that thought quicker is what tactical thinking is all about.
And what's the third component you have?
That's it. Ability to adapt, make decisions quickly, and process information faster. So potentially in a reverse, ability to adapt, to process the information faster, and then make those decisions.
That's a
quicker.
Nice little loop, good cycle.
Yeah. So how would you say that kids traditionally learn tactical thinking?
Hold on, Doug. I'm doing what a lot of scholars do. I'm stealing what you just said to potentially turn it into my own original thought at a later date, calling it the tactical thinking cycle. I really like what you just...
The Kotecki theorem on tactical thinking.
Yeah, I really like what you just did there. Give me the question one more time.
So you've got an education background.
Yep.
How do kids traditionally learn tactical thinking?
I don't know. I'd say at recess.
And I mean, the answer, I mean, maybe they don't.
Well,
quite
I would
frankly.
Say at recess in Phi Ed, I think playing games, you know, when they play them. But in terms of a structure, formal, I could make the stretch in the science classroom from time to time when you're testing and retesting and really, you know, learning the scientific method. But stock market simulation, which is kind of a wheelhouse, 7th grade to 9th grade, but not super fun simulation.
So why do tabletop games teach this skill so well?
Oh my goodness.
Because
the game changes constantly, and yet I have the agency to make decisions. It's not a teacher telling me what to do. It's not my friend next to me telling me what to do. I get to make the decision, and now that puts you in the position to make the decision. And so it is that loop that occurs of I do, you do.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there with the idea of, you know, there's not often times in a classroom and in traditional education where you get to make the decisions for yourself.
And the stakes are kind of high. I mean, there's reasons for that, right?
What do you mean? In the game, the stakes are higher?
Well, and you've done homeschooling, right?
Yep.
And you have to have a scripted day. You have to have a scripted lesson. Otherwise, you're going to have 24 little kiddos running around and telling you what your day is like.
Yeah.
Or in your case, even if it's three, it can feel like 24 telling you what to do.
Well, and the idea that even in the education, it's like, yes, I have the choice to write down the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm not being put into scenarios where I'm being the leader, right?
Yeah.
You're the leader of your own. In a game, you're the leader of your game.
Of your hand,
and you're
making,
you're the boss. You get to make those decisions. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of opportunities throughout the day in a classroom setting to give every kid the opportunity to be a boss.
Well, and even
to make those decisions.
In a Phi Ed setting, it's tough because from middle school on up, you get hyper-competitive athletes who want to just really show how good they are at Phi Ed.
Yeah.
And you can have the world's greatest Phi Ed teacher with amazing culture in that classroom, and somebody's hyper competitiveness might
I mean, you
really
can you can have a guy in his high school class that's playing indoor gym wiffle ball that breaks his hand because he's so competitive.
Is that you, Duck?
It may be.
Oh, can't wait to see that highlight video.
But,
was your dad there to film the wiffle ball game so we can see the broken hand?
No, my parents refused to believe that it was broken until like a week later. They told me to toughen up until we finally went to the hospital and I got x-rays. But the point being, there is no... The tabletop game is so great for this skill development of tactical thinking because you can pack that thing, that concept, into a 15, a 30, a 1-hour game that schools are having a hard time putting in an 8-hour day.
Right.
Like, you can't find those opportunities.
Here's the other piece where it really comes out in abundance. And we haven't scripted this out, so feel free to cut me off because this might be a future school of gaming. The reflection, the post-game reflection. So to put it in scholarly terms, the reflection on action that happens after, not reflection in action during, but the reflection of what I did after, I think is the place where tactical thinking continues to improve. Because if I'm playing a board game with one other, two other, three other people, I could talk about the why of what I did. And in that moment, that's where I really feel like not only does my skill set continue to improve, but then the other gamers do as well.
Yeah. And you're learning on your own decisions. You're learning on the successes and failures of your own decisions and everyone that you're playing with.
But when you get into a rhythm of reflecting together as a group and you find out, well, Doug, why did you do that? You know, why did you put that shape there to complete that card in the second round? Oh, you wanted to get the trophy. You saw that you could get a 6-pointer and then thought you might also get the 5-pointer. Now I get why you did that.
Yeah.
So I'm also learning about your tactical decisions. In the Phi Ed setting, in the art classroom, that's not happening.
Yeah,
it's just not.
Yeah.
You don't have the time to fully unpack why people did things, and you don't have that magical circle that we've talked about where people are still free to play and have objectives and different constraints and parameters to try to solve, right?
Yeah, yeah. You have people that are facing the exact same experience as you and making different decisions, and you can learn from those. And it's one of the things that, you know, we talk about this in the gaming world and skills. Well, how does it apply to the real world? And tactical thinking, if you think about the amount of curveballs that you get thrown in a single day that you need to pivot, readjust, make a new decision on, it's everywhere. It's probably one of the most frequently used skills that I use in a day without even realizing it.
Which route to get to Taco Bell? Based on what Waze or Google or Apple or whatever.
And I've got 20 different ways to get there, and I got to figure out the right one.
But in all seriousness, I think that the tactical thinking cycle that you've outlined here with the ability to adapt, make decisions faster, and process faster really assists me in my plugged-in world, right? Because if I get a call with a sick kiddo, got to go pick up a kiddo at school, and now I have to completely reshuffle my calendar, right? Or even that sense of where I'm driving, there's an accident ahead. How am I going to adjust? We can laugh about it, but those are skills. I still have to make the decision. The technology can tell me that something happened, but I still need to make that decision.
Yeah.
And being tactical.
You can save something. 1 minute by using this alternate route. You get those pop up every once in a while. And in more serious notes, it's I walk in and they tell me, I had my heart set on a Naked Chicken Chalupa, and they tell me it's sold out. We're no longer carrying it. I got to pivot. I got to go to a different menu item.
And in actual serious notes, you know, Jocko Willink, who is a Navy SEAL and has his own podcast and just a phenomenal guru to leaders, talks about being able to prioritize and execute, right? Prioritize and then make a decision not based on your priorities. I'm telling you, if you have kiddos ages 8 to 20, get them playing some of the board games that we've been talking about and just watch them with their ability to prioritize and execute. So
outside of the game.
Outside of the game. Yeah, it's real.
Yep. So that is tactical thinking in the school of gaming. Hope you got
the
something out of that
of
one.
School of gaming. And well done, Doug.
Yeah, let's move on to the
hold
high
on,
five.
Hold on, first, go. I think we need to copyright that. We threw out two different things. What did you call it? You put theorem on it as if it could never be disproven.
Oh, yeah.
And you put your name on it.
Yeah.
So go ahead. We'll try with your name first.
The Kotecki Tactical Thinking Theorem.
Theorem. Okay. And the McCabean Tactical Thinking Cycle.
Oh, okay.
So choose one. We got both bases covered. Way to go, bud. Yeah. Good job.
Send that into the Twitter. Let us know. Make a vote for that one. So that is tactical thinking. Let's move on to the high five. If you're anything like us, you're constantly on the hunt for new games to try out. This week's High Five includes a top five list of family-friendly push-your-luck games. I guess we should start by describing what push-your-luck is, huh?
Yeah, Doug. What's push-your-luck?
No idea. No. It's no whammies, no whammies, no whammies, stop.
Big bucks, stop.
Yeah. Yep. So that was press your luck. So the idea is you've got something in the bank, and you're deciding whether you want to push on and risk losing everything or get more.
I need to make a decision. I need to make a decision right now. There are good things that could happen, and there are bad things that
could happen. Very bad things. So this one's got a bunch of... I could have done a top 10 on this one.
I'll bet.
A lot of stuff. So I'll fly through. I wanted to put some different games that we haven't talked about. And so there's some new stuff on here. I don't know if we've talked about any of these games, quite frankly. So here's the quick honorable mention. King of Tokyo, Dead Man's Draw, which is a great pirate game where you are adding new cards. And if you... new cards to your collection, and if you draw the same symbol again, you bust, and you kind of lose everything. Mystic Veil is a deck-building game where you are deciding to push on to see how many good cards you can get before they spoil, and if you spoil, you don't really get to do anything your turn.
Great app, by the way.
Yes, very good app. And then Welcome to the Dungeon is another honorable mention. That's one where everybody's kind of... armoring, either stealing armor or adding armor and adding monsters to a dungeon that somebody's going to have to go through, and you're deciding when you want to back out or not and go through. So on to the list proper.
Only four on the honorable mention this week, huh?
Yeah. All right. I don't know how to count, so I'm good on skills, not very much on arithmetic. So number five I have is No Thanks. No Thanks is a deck of cards numbered 2 to 35. And every turn a card is flipped over, and you are either going to take that numbered card or you're going to put one of your chips on it. Eventually, somebody is going to take that card with the chips on it. Now, you want to get the lowest score possible, and the chips are negative points. But the way that it works is you're going to score based on the number of cards that you have, the numbers on the cards that you have. However, if you have a clump of cards together, you only score, or a run of cards, you only score the lowest number. So, for example, if I had card numbers 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that whole group is only going to count as 2 points. So you are pushing your luck on the idea of, is the card, like I've got 28, 29, 31, and 32.
How big are the actual cards?
Oh, they're just playing cards. Okay. They're playing cards. Yeah, so... So I've got that group with a little bit of a gap in there. So if I don't get that 30, I'm going to be scoring 28 points and 31 points.
Oh, wow.
But if I get the 30, I'm only scoring 28 points. So you're pushing your luck on, and you don't know which cards are in there.
Yeah.
In the deck. Some of them are pulled out every game. So it's that whole thing of like, do I take this and can I connect it later? And that type of thing. So there's this constant kind of push your luck going on.
That's awesome.
The next one is Pandemic the Cure. This is the dice version of Pandemic. And what makes this a push your luck thing is in traditional Pandemic, you're taking actions. You've got four actions you can spend every turn to do things. This one, your actions are determined by dice that you're rolling. But the interesting thing is that you can keep rolling the dice to try and get the results that you want. However, there are biohazard symbols that are on the dice. Those get locked. And if you keep getting those, you're going to be triggering outbreaks and spreading disease everywhere. So that push your luck of how far am I going to push this? And that's another game, too, where you talk about alpha gaming and cooperative games. This one, the agency is on the person's turn.
The individual making it.
They get to decide. I mean, obviously, there's discussions going on. But at a certain point, it comes down to it's like, I know you're telling me all not to do this, but I'm going to try.
Do it anyway.
I'm going to do it, and so, then I'm going to roll all biohazards, and everybody at the table is going to hate me.
That game can go real bad real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Just to put that out there. This is one of the first games I played at game night. I don't know if you remember that or not. And I did exactly what you just described. Like, I'm going to do it anyway. Oh, Really sorry, guys. I guess we can move on to a different game now, right? That game, you can lose in a hurry.
All right. So number three is Quacks of Quedlinburg. In this game, you are building a potion, and you are throwing ingredients into your pot. And if you get too much of one ingredient, your pot's going to explode.
Greater than seven, you're done.
Yeah. So you're trying to add stuff, and basically, if your pot busts, you can either, there's two things you can do every turn. You can score points, or you can get new ingredients for your potion. If you don't bust, you can do both. If you bust, you have to pick one of those. So you're trying to maximize the money and the points that you can get every round. But every time you do that, you're running a risk of busting. And it's a great game, maybe a little bit more on the complicated side. This is not something you're going to just play with all your young kids. But that middle school range and above, this is going to be an awesome game for you.
And that's the cut line. I would say 12 years old on up, great game for if you have friends over and you want to play a game. Maybe they've played a few different games, but they're not gamers. This is a great game you can play. The Watch It Play tutorial is phenomenal. I'm a big fan of Quacks.
Yeah, and a lot of variability too. So you can scale this up. A lot of replayability, and you can make it as complex and simple as you want, depending on which modules and things that you kind of add into the game.
I should have said Watch It Played is a YouTube channel that Rodney Smith puts out. I know a lot of the gamers obviously know that, but if you're just dipping your foot into game school and gaming, Quacks is a phenomenal $40 to $50-ish investment that you will get your money out of. It's a great return on investment. At least that's what we found in our house.
Yep. All right, so number two, this is called, it's got two names. I think I'm Board Game Geek right now. It's called Diamant, but it's also released and is available as Ink and Gold. I have Ink and Gold in my collection. Now, you're talking about a design duo. This is Bruno Fedutti and Alan Moon from Ticket to Ride. So a good group of guys there. And on this one, you are flipping over cards. You're going into a mine. Everybody's choosing to go into this mine to get treasure. And as you go in, more treasure is being added to the mine. So I'll flip over a card and say it's got eight treasure. And there's three of us in the game. That eight is going to be divided left. And then the two is going to be placed on the pathway. Right? You keep going further and further in. Well, there's hazards in the mine. And the first one comes out, no big deal. There's a spider. Okay. Every turn before you draw a new card, you can choose to stay and keep going deeper into the mine, or you can go back to camp. If you go back to camp, you get every treasure that you've collected up to that point. And in fact, I think you even take some that's on the path as you walk out. Okay. If you stay in the mine, and that second spider card comes up, you lose everything.
Oh, wow. Everything?
Everything. Well, everything that you've collected in that round. I think you play three or four rounds. And then you start over again.
Have you played this with your kiddos?
Not yet, okay. No. But it gets to a point where then somebody decides to stay in there. You're the only ones in there. And then an eight comes up. And you get all eight treasure because there's nobody else to split it with. So it's like, how far do you keep pushing? You know, and there's... I think the kicker is that every turn people are deciding whether to stay or leave.
Yep.
If only one person leaves, they take all the treasure out that was left that couldn't be divided. If two people leave, they don't get anything.
Oh, wow.
So you're trying to time when you leave so you can get the treasure on the way out, or do I stay in longer and try and push my luck? So a great, and it's a good party game. I think it might play up to six players. I could be wrong, but...
you're right. It's 3 to 8, actually.
3 to 8.
Yeah.
So
for 6 to 8.
Yeah, a lot of when you get a lot of people in there and you're trying to second guess when people might be staying or leaving, it's a pretty good time.
That's great.
And then number one, I had to put as the number. This is Push Your Luck personified, and this is Can't Stop. This is a game by Sid Sackson. It probably came out in the 70s, maybe like 74 or something like that. And this is a game, it's a simple game. There's a track with the numbers 2 through 12 on it. And each turn, you roll two dice. okay? Or four dice, sorry. You roll four dice, and you need to split it into pairs. And so each pair that you have, you move up. So if I've got a three and a three, and I make that into a six, I move up on the six track. And then the other ones were a 12. Basically, you're moving these cones up this track. And you keep, once you roll, you decide, okay, I want to roll again. Which you can keep going as long as you can always move one of your cones. And you can only have three cones going at a time moving up these tracks. So you're saying, okay, I want to do it again. All right, and then I moved up again on the six. All right, I got lucky there. And then I roll again. If I can't move one of my cones with those results, either one of the pairs, I lose everything. All my cones go back to where I started that round. Or you can stop and lock them in. And you're trying to get to the top of the track and lock out three tracks before anyone else.
Right.
And it's almost like a pyramid based on the probability of how many times that number would come out. So
you does that make 1980. Sense? Yeah, I think I played this game, but it was just 30 years ago. What? Tell me why this is number one ahead, because two of the games on here I just absolutely love. Quacks, especially, you know, that's in the McCabe Family Hall of Fame as well. Tell me where.
Because this is it's the purest form of push your luck, which is bank what you have now. Okay. Or risk everything.
So it's a slot machine, basically, in a board game? Or
in
not
a way,
that
I mean, you can lock in your gains,
yeah.
You know, and step away, and then your next turn comes around, and you build off of that. Or you can try and run the table.
Cool.
So it's number one because the rules are simple, it's easy to play, it's fast, and it's the purest form of if you want to teach the concept of push your luck that, what was that, what was that the briefcase game with let's make a deal?
Yeah.
It's that type of thing on the purest level of do you want to go forward?
Yeah.
Or do you want to stop?
No, so. I like it, Doug. And that's from 1980 edition you can find out there still, which lets you know that the Parker Brothers first edition, and you can get it for $25,
yeah.
Was readily available. This is a game that everybody has, and it's still sold on Amazon. So
yep. You can still get a copy of
this. I'm going to do the 5-to-1 recap, if that's okay. Anything else to add? Great. So here's our high five push your luck games. Coming in at number 5, No Thanks with an exclamation point, 2004. The designer is Thorsten Gimler, and that's from published by Amigo. Number 4, Pandemic, 2014. That's Pandemic the Cure. I apologize, Pandemic the Cure, which is one of my favorite pandemics. Matt Leacock, of course, 2014, Z-Man Games. Did you want to correct me on that?
Nope,
usually
all good
I get corrected
so far.
On that. Good. Yep. Number 3, one of my personal favorite. I absolutely love it. I can play it every week and be happy. Quacks of Quedlinburg, 2018 release. Thank you very much. Wolfgang Warsch, love that game. Tons of game schooling and family fun as well. Number 2.
Published by North Star Games.
North Star Games, I apologize. Yep, North Star Games did that one. Number 2, I am going to say Diamant because that's the one that I found on Board Game Geek. Board Game Geek, or Ink and Gold, all that ran together. But Diamant, D-I-A-M-A-N-T, 2005 released, Bruno Faduti and Alan R. Moon. That is now getting thrown to the top of my want to playlist after you describing that, Doug. That sounds like a fantastic game that I absolutely want to play, maybe even today yet. And coming in at number 1, 1980, Sid Saxon, Can't Stop, published by Parker Brothers.
Yeah, and
great
I think
list
now it's by Eagle Griffin, maybe?
Okay.
Eagle Griffin might publish it now, I think. So, yeah, that is the High Five Push Your Luck Games. If you're new to the show, please consider subscribing to our podcast. You can do that anywhere that podcasts are available. Reminder to like us on Facebook if you haven't already. Follow us on Twitter. At GameSchoolerU is our handle. And reach out if you've got questions about game schooling.
Bring
if
them.
You've got questions about games,
working
recommendations.
Together, partnering, talking about game schooling with kiddos, right?
Yep, let us know. There's a contact form on our website, gameschooler.com. If you want to fill that out there, go to gameschooler.com. We've got great resources. We've got recommended games lists, blog posts. Some of the high five lists are up there. And some other information on skill building and skill developing that's happening there. So check that out. We just want to thank you so much for spending the last hour or so with us. We really appreciate it.
Now get out there and start game schooling.